The seriously big draw card session at the Shangri-La Dialogue was Saturday mornings when General Jim Mattis, the US Defence Secretary, was presenting and taking questions. He's a retired Marine Corps general. He's a veteran of the wars, as we heard earlier in the program, in Afghanistan and Iraq, highly regarded as a big ongoing student of history and how it helps understand current dilemmas. And he was one of President Donald Trump's first big appointments, if you recall, back in January, amidst widespread praise from the international community and some relief. General Mattis delivered a scripted speech first to an absolutely jam-packed Shangri-La ballroom with another huge group listening outside via transmitted images, followed by a more spontaneous and candid Q&A, a question time energetically led, shall we say, by our own Michael Fullilove, who's head of the Lowy Institute. Here's an edited version.
Secretary Mattis, first of all, let me commend you, if I may, for taking on your current post with all its stresses and strains. For many of us, sir, you are the hope of the side. But I'd like to ask you about the rules-based global order, which you mentioned at the outset of your remarks and in which President Trump appears to be an unbeliever. 70 years ago, Secretary Acheson wrote that he was present at the creation of a US-led order that has served all of us well. General, given everything over the past 4 months, including NATO and TPP and Paris, why should we not fret that we are present at the destruction of that order? Please give us cause for optimism, General.
You can always count on some straightforward questions here, can't you? as far as the rule-based order, you know, obviously we have a new president in Washington, D.C., and there's going to be fresh approaches taken. But just the fact that, just take a look at the president's first trip outside the United States was straight into the heart of one of the most bewildering and difficult challenges that the world faces in terms of how do we restore stability and peace into the Middle East, where the discussion was about how do we work together, in this case with the Arab League and with other international organizations, in order to reduce the threat of terrorism. So I think that we have been engaged in the world for a long time. I think historically the Americans have been reluctant to see themselves in that role. We were quite happy between our two oceans to stay there. The 20th century took us out of that. But at the same time, we recognized, especially the greatest generation, we call them, coming home from World War II, what a crummy world if we all retreat inside our own borders. How many people deprived of good lives during the Depression? How many tens of millions of people killed in World War II, like it or not, were part of the world? That carries through for all the frustrations that are felt in America right now, for the sense that at times we have carried an inordinate burden. That is still very deeply rooted in the American psyche, that engagement with the world. And I think that, to quote a British observer of us from some years ago, bear with us. Once we've exhausted all possible alternatives, the Americans will do the right thing. So we will still be there, and we will be there with you. The fact that President Trump went to Brussels, he was there to show our statement that we are standing with the NATO allies, 100%. He sent me on my first trip after I was nominated to Tokyo and Seoul in order to make certain there was no misunderstanding that we stood with the democracies of Japan and Korea. So we are there, and I can give you absolute optimism on this issue. I would also say that in regards to China and whether or not the North Korea issue outweighs the South China Sea, this sort of thing, there's a lot more between the United States than just two issues. There are many areas, as I noted, of common interest, and certainly on terrorism, on nuclear proliferation. There are any number of issues where we have common ground with China. And to put it into a binary option of either we have to walk away from our values and what we stand for on freedom of navigation and all because we need to work with China on North Korea. We're working with China on North Korea, ladies and gentlemen, because That is also a problem for China. I do not choose to send THAAD to South Korea to protect the South Korean people from an imaginary problem. This is a real problem, and the problem is not South Korea putting a wholly defensive system for the defense of their own people into position. The problem is North Korea, and if we want to stop bringing more military capability into the Northwest Pacific, then we have to address the problem that is a threat to Japan, to South Korea, and all the other nations.
From Singapore, Kishore Mahbubani.
Thank you, Secretary Mattis, for your speech. You said that U.S.-China competition will rise. It'll probably rise more acutely in the economic arena. China has launched the Belt and Road Initiative. United States has withdrawn from TPP. Is there any possibility at all of the United States reconsidering its decision to withdraw from TPP? Because that will be a powerful signal to this region.
And the final question from Australia, Christopher Roberts.
I'm from UNSW at the Australian Defence Force Academy. Some might argue that China has already largely achieved its goals in the South China Sea. Given my own discussions in Manila and beyond, US relations with President Duterte and President Duterte's stand over the South China Sea might be improved if the US provides a continuous security presence around features such as the Scarborough Shoal, perhaps even via a coalition of coast guards, including Australia, and an unconditional guarantee to protect the legally declared EEZ of the Philippines. Can the US take such steps to put an immediate halt to the expansion of China's presence within the EEZ of the Philippines? And could something similar be done in the case of Vietnam and perhaps Malaysia? Thank you.
Let me jump over here to South China Sea. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to work together on this. I don't think there's room right now to get into pushing adversarial approaches. What we have to do is take into account, number one, what each nation's interests are. They're in the South China Sea, and then we have to have mediation capability in order to ensure that small nations, large nations, all nations can work them out to mutual satisfaction, because that's the only way we will have an enduring solution. Yeah, and on the TPP situation, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a fresh approach. Obviously, there were many disappointed about the TPP decision, but at the same time, it only directs us to bilateral approaches and other multilateral approaches that we will engage in. It means one avenue did not meet our nation's population's desires, but it doesn't mean we're turning our back on relations that we would work out on a bilateral basis as a result.
General Yao from China.
I'm curious to know what international rules are the freedom of navigation operations based by the United States? Because to my understanding that about 50 countries in the world have made national laws asking for prior notification or consent when foreign military ships enters their territory waters.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. Hiroyuku Akita from Japan.
You said that if there is a war in North Korea, it's going to be a tragic on an unbelievable scale. Do you think that the U.S. will act, if necessary, preemptively, without give warning to the foreigners living in South Korea? Thank you.
Right. We have the law of the sea. I recognize your question, General. But the law of the sea is not the only law that we go by in the sea, that one act. I would just tell you that there's a tradition in the sea. There's traditional areas of the sea that have been used as international waters since time began. And we believe that those kinds of standards should be maintained. They should not be unilaterally changed. No matter what one nation's interests are, we have to work together if we're going to have the freedom of commerce that all nations can benefit from. As far as about having any warning or, you know, how we address North Korea, right now we are doing our best through the United Nations, through engaging with Beijing's good offices, working with the international community, obviously working with the Republic of South Korea, Japan. We are trying to exhaust all possible alternatives to avert this race for a nuclear weapon. We've also seen North Korea engaged in proliferation activities, which means those nuclear capabilities are not solely being retained by North Korea in their own defense. They are actually exporting some of that capability, some of that knowledge. We want to stop this. We consider it urgent, and we obviously work very, very closely with the United Nations Command and the sending nations being those that sent troops under the UN Security Council resolution in 1950. Because that war was never ended, those nations are still committed to maintaining the peace on the peninsula. And so we work obviously with them as well in terms of the military options. But right now we are doing our very best to exhaust all economic and diplomatic initiatives to get this under control.
And that's General Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense of the US, answering a range of questions. There's a lot of discussion about North Korea at the dialogue, and if we get a chance, we'll bring you a little bit more over the coming weeks.